The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Live off the record with Chicago Lang is brought to you by Bahamas First General Insurance Company, Burger King, Commonwealth Bank, Island Luck, Prince Masters, RF Bank and Trust, Ross Electric Motors, Southwest Plaza, Star General, Insurance Made Simple, and Wendy's.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Chivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. I trust and hope that you are doing well. If you want to give us a call today on the show, the numbers to do so are 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316, 325-4316, or 325-4259. That's 325-4259. You can call us from the Family Islands on 242-300-5720. That's 242-300-5720. You can text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. That's 439-3043. We are live on Cable Bahamas Channel 969, or you can catch us on BTC Flow Channel 612. Michael Pintard, the leader of the Free National Movement and the leader of the opposition, has had to refute claims that he works for and is on the side of the Grand Bahama Port Authority over Bahamians. This is a charge that the Progressive Bloc and its operatives have been leveling against him. The Prime Minister has been essentially hinting at that and others, that, you know, he's not on the side of the people because he's not joining the government in its fight against the port. Prime Minister himself has essentially said that if you don't side with us in this matter, then you are siding with the people. So that's what he's saying. Prime Minister said that. For Michael Pintard, this is a peculiar situation to be in. It is a tricky situation, quite frankly, to be in. On an ordinary day, in an ordinary situation, saying that you believe in cordiality, you believe that people should work together, you believe that people should be able to civilly negotiate instead of being combative with each other, is a mature and professional thing to say. It don't make no difference what people out there say. If you are a mature person and you are a professional person, your posture should be to work civilly, cordially with other people, even if you are opposed to them. Okay? I mean, if you look at Mr. Pintard and Mr. Davis, their posture toward each other as political rivals has been something to be admired for the most part. They are civil, they are courteous, etc. From time to time, they get a little, you know, under the radar, they get a little edgy. But for the most part, they've been civil. So they expect and would demonstrate civility, cordiality with each other. But if you say you'll be cordial with the port, that's a problem. On an ordinary basis, that would not be a problem. That would be regarded as sensible, mature leadership. Problem is, we are not in ordinary times. We are not in ordinary circumstances. And it isn't simply because election is coming. That's not true. The problem, if you are Mr. Pintard, with how you posture and how that posture is perceived and respected the Port Authority is this. Brave Prime Minister Davis did not make the Port, Grandmama Port Authority an enemy of many people in Grand Bahama. He did not do that. He played on it. He accentuated it. He leveraged it. He even gambled on it. But he didn't do it. The Grand Bahama Port Authority from the days of Albert Miller, Edward St. George, and Jack Hayward has never been a fan of most Grand Bahamians. Mind you, it's a kind of love-hate relationship. Grand Bahamians respect, regard the Port Authority's upkeep of Freeport generally, and relatively speaking in the region, you cannot really match it. They regard the orderliness with which things happen in the port area. You go to Freeport, go to Freeport. You ain't see no shanty towns in Freeport. You just see them in New Providence and Abaco and them, though. You see any shanty towns in Freeport? No, sorry, Bob. You go in Freeport, you don't see no shouty construction in Freeport, not in Freeport. You could see it in New Providence and some of these other family islands. After a hurricane, you watch the homes which the port's inspectors have inspected and see how they fare. They might have, they get damages, but you ain't, you're not going to say they were damaged because of faulty construction. So there is some admiration and respect and regard there. But in terms of the heart and spirit and graciousness and a sense of you love us and like us, people don't have no love for the port like that. No love for the Grandmama Port Authority. If you're in the Grandmama Port Authority and you're listening to me, you have to know. You know. People in Grandmama have no love for the Grandmama Port Authority. And I'm not saying they shouldn't need to. Or that you need to want that as a Grandmama Port Authority. But the reality is people in Grand Bahama simply don't like the Port Authority. And so if you are Michael Pintard, whose currency as a politician is popularity, then you can damage your property with Grand Bahamians and those Bahamians broadly who may have embraced that dislike for the Grand Bahama Port Authority and even come to believe in this adversarial relationship that the Davis administration now has with the Grand Bahama Port Authority. With those people, your popularity could take a hit if they perceive that your posture favors the Grand Bahama Port Authority. That's a problem. That's a real problem. Right? Hubert Alexander Ingram had no, like, his relationship with the Grand Bahama Port Authority was great. I think largely because, they knew who they were getting even before he became prime minister. And his thoughts about the Grandmama Port Authority, good, bad, and ugly, was laid out there for them to know. But he worked with St. George and Sir Albert and them in ways that was focused on one price. I don't need to get along with you as much as you and I need to respect the arrangement that exists in law between the government, the Port Authority, and the licensees. And let's get, for people of Grand Bahama, things that people of Grand Bahama needed. They needed schools. I need two schools, Jack Hayward, St. George's. You put $7 million, I'll put the rest. I need a stadium for these young people to go practice their sports. Stadium done. I need a courthouse for the people of the Bahamas to have in Grand Bahama the means to go to court. Done. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you don't have to have no love relationship. Ingram didn't ever talk about whether he would have a cordial or non-cordial relationship with them. There's a piece of legislation that governs the arrangement. we're the government of the Bahamas, you're the Port Authority, and we're going to operate on the basis of how we serve the people of Grand Bahama. And in his tenure in the 90s, you saw the container port come and the shipyard come and the Alukaya come and so forth and so forth. So it is a tricky scenario if you are a leader of the opposition trying to get the government, who has a government trying to use a conflict with the port as a political bargaining chip. It is, right? And so now they are trying to frame a narrative that says, either you with us or you with the port. Mind you, that's a false narrative. It's a false dichotomy, but that's what is being created. And so how you posture in respect of that as leader of the opposition can be a problem. So he finds himself having to defend that he is not for the Port Authority, he is not for the government, but he is for the people of the Bahamas, because the accusations being leveled are to the contrary. This says, IZ, why the dislike for the Port Authority on the part of Grand Bahamians? It is well-founded. I don't understand it. Well, you don't understand it because you don't live in Freeport. So here's the thing, right? Whenever you are the authority in a place, so you are the rule giver. How you operate in the place, you're the rule giver. You are the one who levies charges on me, service charges and other fees and so forth, within the limits of your authority. You're the one who gets to say, you could do this here, you could do this there. I feel like whenever you are in that situation, you are the power structure. And so it isn't unusual in that situation for people, if things ain't going so good for them, especially if what you are, the rules you are laying might oppose how they would want to function, for them to be at odds with you. This is one of the reasons why governments are not popular. They're the taxpayers. I mean, the tax makers, they will determine who gets what and what. So governments don't get to be as popular as they would like to be, because they are having to make choices between people. They have to decide for you. They have to levy charges and fees and taxes on you. So the port is the de facto kind of quasi government in Freeport. And so just like you ain't like the government many times, I don't know any Bahamian who runs around going, oh, I just love government. I just love government. I just love the government. That's not true. You might like an administration because of the things they do for you at a given point in time, but you don't like the government that makes you pay a fee to license your car, make you pay a fee. The Port Authority is the same way. The biggest difference, though, is the Port Authority isn't an elected group trying to do anything to pacify the people in Grand Bahama. They are not having Junkanoo rush out to pacify you. They are not having, they're not trying to give out, have giveaways to pacify you. They don't do any of those things. They don't have social services where you could go to them when you're hurting. And no, you go and pay your fees. And if you don't pay your fees, there's consequences to be had. So that's the difference. It's the same thing as with any government. Same thing, no different. Only they are a private entity and they are not in the business of pandering. That's the biggest difference between the government and the Grand Bahama Port Authority. They are a private entity and they don't pander. And pandering in politics is a part of how you get some popularity, right? So that's the reason, essentially. They're just the power, and there. And some days, some many days, people are hurting and not feeling any strength, and they hate the people who they think are doing it. And if the economy of Freeport isn't good, well, you the power in Freeport. Why the economy ain't good? You should be making the economy good. And then the families are not, mind you, if you meet them personally, they are cordial people and so forth. But there is a kind of aloofness about the, especially this new generation, right? Edward St. George was like, Edward St. George could have been a politician in any country. He knew how to move around and work people, and he would do things. He'd give handouts to people, even on the street. He was like a real political personality. In ways, Edward St. George was probably more popular as a person than Albert Miller was as the president of the board, because Albert Miller was more, you know, was a much more serious, really, really serious person, not so much, you know, that mingling kind of way. Edward St. George was not like that, right? But this new group, like Sarah, she will mingle and she will go out and interact with people, but they are not. They are not people who endears people to themselves, and so there's a kind of aloofness that people see in that, and so that creates some challenges. Also, and then you have in the president of the port, a very nice gentleman for sure. But again, he's not a mingler. He's not, you know, the community doesn't, you know, that's not going to embrace him like a Edward St. George kind of personality or that kind of way. And so, again, there's a kind of aloofness that gets created because of that. I think the Port Authority in general, outside of the period of Edward St. George and Jack Hayward, I think they play their politics poorly. And I don't mean politics of partisanship, FNM versus PIP. I mean the politics of power dynamics amid the people you are engaging with and responsible for. I think that they play that poorly. This text says, good day. I thought the PM said he wasn't going to be campaigning during Lent. This text is, why the ministers and country leaders behaving so obtuse about the process to get renovations and other things done? It is asinine to know and admit something doesn't work and remain complicit with it. Changes to this broken system is within their scope of power. Mr. Monroe alluded to this issue yesterday. Now, Mr. Davil, collaboratively get together, stop complaining about the problem and fix it. That can be an issue in governance for sure. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand. Come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Try to rest, go with the best. For all your printing needs, there ain't no one better, no. For posters and banners, magazines and flyers. For window decals, greeting cards and newsletters. No job too big and there's no job too small. You name it, we can print it, just give us a call. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located at the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
Struggling to find your financial rhythm? Make that move to Fidelity and let us help you orchestrate your financial goals into perfect harmony with free financial coaching sessions. Make that move today. Call 356-7764.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Great news! Ron's Electric Motors' new location on Cowpen Road, right next to Island Luck, is open Saturdays and Sundays. So for those needing repairs on electric motors, generators, welding machines, water pumps, battery chargers, electric lifts, transformers, and power tools, Ron's Cowpen Road location can have you up and running on weekends. Don't forget, you can still visit Ron's Electric Motors on Wolf Road and Claridge Road, and now Ron's new location on Cowpen Road. Dial 356-0249 or 323-5267.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. I'm so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. We're talking about Mr. Pintad and a perception regarding his siding with the Port Authority, as is being claimed by the government, some political operatives, and certainly a perception that some have come to embrace about him. I no more believe that Prime Minister Davis is an enemy of the port, I do not believe that to be true. Nor do I believe that Michael Pintad is on the side of the Grand Bahama Port Authority. I don't believe that either. But it would be foolish for the Free National Movement and Mr. Pintad to ignore that this perception is, one, being planted, and two, exist in some respects amid some portion of the population. And I have to say, knowing what I know and understand about the perception of the port, there is no political upside. Little political upside to any gesture that makes one to be siding with or defending the Grand Bahama Port Authority versus the government. Outside of, I don't know no Grand Bahamians. Well, I don't know many Grand Bahamians. Who would repay the Grand Bahama Port Authority with the government moms today, given what they know about what the areas in Grand Bahama the government has responsibility for. I know no one. I don't know anyone who would say, yeah, we want the government to take over Freeport. No one. And that notwithstanding, I don't know too many people who would think fondly of any political personality who appears to be or who sides with the Grand Bahama Port Authority. The Grand Bahama Port Authority is not political. Politically siding with the Grand Bahama Port Authority is not politically helpful. It is not. No more than siding with banks on fees, siding with illegal Haitians is helpful politically. They're just, whether you think people are reasonable or unreasonable, if you're playing your politics right, you don't give the perception of siding with any of those issues. That's just the reality of things. And there's no need to. There's no siding that has to happen. There is what is the reality, and you're contending with the reality. And I'm going to talk about that reality and try to drive it home again soon. Because I think that this nonsense, this talk about winning and losing and who has what power and this power and this we now clarify that this and we clarify. I think all of that is nonsense. Lots of it is just nonsense talk. It's like, I mean, it's really, honestly, I almost think it's immature petty. Why would you say something like that, Chibaro? Because we are a country of laws. The Hawksford Creek Agreement is enshrined in law. Law. All of the actors, Grandmama Port Authority, licensees, the government of the Bahamas, all must act in accordance with the law. Period. This ain't about whether I like you or don't like you. This ain't about whether you should change or not change. None of that matters. This rhetoric, this bunch of talk, nonsense to me, because we are a country of laws. What does the law say? If we can't agree on the law, thank God we created a process in this country that says, if you don't agree, arbitrate. If you don't agree, go to court. If you are unclear about the law, go to make the law clear. I don't even need to be rowing with you. I don't need to be getting up in public. What sense does it mean, me getting up in public, rowing with you? We have laws. And if you are obeying the law, bless the Lord. Thank you, Jesus. If you are not obeying the law, my law enforcers must do their job. If we are unclear about the law, we go to the arbitrators of our judiciary, our legal system, the courts or the arbitrators. And we say, we disagree on what the law says. And the arbitrators may say, and the courts may say, yes, this is what the law says. And you might think, as a government, as an example, no, I don't want the law to say that. Then you take your backside to the Parliament of the Bahamas and you adjust the law for it to say what you want to say, so long as you don't contradict your constitution. And if you think the constitution needs to change, it tells you how to change it. So go and change it. We are in laws. Why am I rowing? Why am I telling you you shouldn't be doing this? Why am I? We are a country of laws. All of the actors are people who must obey the law. Period. I hope you see that. Right? A government of the Bahamas, as an example, don't need to be flexing with the port. Flex it in public through rhetoric. Why? You ain't doing what you're supposed to do. Think about this for a minute, people. A government of the Bahamas says, you have not been doing what you're supposed to do. Well, how am I supposed to know what you're supposed to do? It's written in the agreement. And the agreement has the force of law. So I go to the agreement and I say, you are not doing what you're supposed to do. That means you are in violation of the law. But I don't need to argue with you about that. You're not doing what you're supposed to do. I'm going to make you do what you're supposed to do. You say, how am I going to make you do that? Well, one, I'm going to stop you from doing it, and I'm going to demand you do it. And if you don't do it, I'm going to take you to court. And then I'll prosecute you if it's criminal. I will sue you if it's civil. And then the courts decide. And if you don't want to do it, I have a measure after that. I don't need to row you. Row you for what? Flexing, and I'm talking for year 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. I just talking. Who has the power then? And who has the power? Well, whoever the law says has the power. You don't want a government. You don't want a port authority that doesn't have law constraining it. You don't want to live in that kind of world. And so we are a country of laws. So the same thing with Mr. Pintat. It don't make no difference whether you can be cordial or not cordial with the port. What does cordiality? If as government, you are to govern. And as government, you make laws and you enforce laws. And the port authority is required to obey the law. And you require them to obey the law. And you obey the law as government. And where they don't obey the law, you the government. Go enforce the law. Period. Doesn't matter. If I'm cordial with you and you breaking the law, how does that help? If I'm not cordial with you and you breaking the law, what difference does it make? You're breaking the law. My job is to enforce the law as government. I don't need to row with you about that. And I don't need to be prettying up and treating you nice with that, because I can tell you one thing. When the Grand Bahama Port Authority has rules down here and you break them, they're not trying to be cordial with you. No, Robo, you can't pitch the roof that way. No. You will not get a permit. They're not interested in, oh, you really need to. No, they tell you what the rules are. And they make you comply with the rules. Right? Now, they're not going to be disrespectful or overly friendly. They're going to just point you in the direction of the rules and tell you why what you are doing cannot be done. So this person, this politics of personality, it makes no difference. I've seen Hubert Alexander Ingram take on a posture with entities in which you could say, well, that wasn't the most courteous or cordial. But what difference does it make? He was appealing to government rules, laws, and policies. Right? Sometimes it's nice to be liked. Nice to be liked, but it's better to be right. Right? I mean, to be right if you is in the business of law. You don't want to be on the side again. And so whose side should you be on? Not the FNM, not the PLP, not the Port Authority. I'm sorry, no, you should be on the side of the law. That's whose side you should be on. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shabab Ali, I'm your host. We'll be back after this break.
I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone. Other people like you make it down the same road.
Young Bahamians, this one for you. If you're between 18 and 35 and you've ever had an idea to make money, to build something of your own, or to change your future, this is your chance. The Tourism Development Corporation is inviting you to step forward and be a part of the Blue, Orange, and Green Economy Pitch Competition. This is about turning your ideas into opportunities. The Blue Economy, powered by our ocean. The Orange Economy, powered by culture and creativity. And the Green Economy, powered by sustainability and innovation. This ain't just a competition. This is access to training, exposure, funding, and access to the support you need to build something real. No matter where you're from, your idea matters, and we need young people like you to step up. You don't have to have everything figured out. You just need to start. Apply now. Step forward and build something that belongs to you. Visit tdcbahamas.com to apply.
Boost your buying power with a margin loan at rates as low as 7.5%. A margin loan offers convenient flexibility, freeing up capital without liquidating your investments. Whether you're looking to diversify, fund a business opportunity, or refinance higher cost debt, RF provides access to cash within 48 hours for any purpose. Tailored, effortless, powerful. Discover how a margin loan can work for you. Visit rfgroup.com or call 603-6000. RF Bank and Trust. Money.
Hey, Nassau, get ready for the new and bold Barbecue Crispy King at Burger King. Two 100% flame-grilled patties stacked with that irresistible onion crunch you love, smoky barbecue sauce, crisp bacon, and melted cheddar, all on a buttery brioche bun. Mmm. Crunch, bacon, cheese, flame-grilled flavor. Swing by any of Burger King's 6 Nassau locations and taste the new Barbecue Crispy King today. Burger King Nassau, where taste is on fire.
Join the Ultra Family. Online signups are here, and it's ultra fast. Start winning from your phone. Sign up online in minutes and jump straight into the action at ultragames.com. And right now, when you sign up online, you're entered for a chance to win a car. That's right, a car.
Okay.
No long line. No stress. Just click, sign up, and start playing. Ultra Games. Unleash your luck.
Must be 18 or older. Ultra Games reminds you it's only a game. Please game responsibly.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. I'm so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. We have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Mr. Lang, how are you doing?
I'm right here, man. How are you?
Okay, real quickly. I wholly agree with what you were just saying. My only caveat to that is I think the average person in society has gotten so much to the point where we do realize that there are laws and there are, you know, things that we should abide by, and it should be pretty much clear. But one of the things that we also do realize is that it appears as though that there are laws that are for certain people and there are laws that are not for certain people, no matter how much there is a conflict thereof. And society will tell us that, okay, well, if Tom is of a certain income structure or family, there's certain rules that apply. And even though there's a standard in the law that states certain things, the perception in the average person's mind is that, okay, that sounds good and all of that sounds good. But at the end of the day, is it actually practically happening with all the mechanisms that are in place?
I feel as though
I understand your view, but I think it has to do with the fact that the average person has seen the law trample upon so often that they tend to believe now, and Christ will have to come down and change that they believe that for certain people.
Just a minute. You make a very clear and articulate and relevant point. No question about it, that if the government doesn't uphold disclosure laws and other things, then people see that as a spit in the face in regard to obeying the law. But that's certainly a way you can feel and a way you can think, but that's not a rational man's thinking. Now, and we all aspire to be our better selves. That's like saying, my son see everyone smoking dope. And he knows that in the school, you're not supposed to be smoking dope, period. But because everybody is doing it, and it seems like there's exceptions for these people, and nobody's doing anything about it, he should hurt his own self by smoking his own dope, dealing drugs, or using illegal weapons. That might, his feelings about how, okay, everybody's doing it, why should I be the only one not doing it? That's not unreal. That's a real feeling he could have. But a sensible thought, a reasonable thought to protect himself is, no, I'm not doing that because that's not good for me. So, yes, we could see 1,000 people do nonsense, as I'm sure God has seen, Jesus has seen, as I'm sure any number of people have seen. But we don't go ahead and do all the other stupid things we see people do just because we saw people doing it.
Quite understandable. Yeah, I understand. And that's basically not what I meant. What I simply meant was the fact that in persons' minds, we know that, you know, it's wrong to steal, shoot somebody, kill, whatever. But what I was fundamentally was saying was that the after so many years of being exposed to, okay, well, it seems as though this is for Tom and this is not for me, the belief, whether someone acts on a belief or not, is the fact that they don't really have very much trust. Because I remember a slogan, I don't know if it was a political slogan, come a little while back, says, it's a matter of trust.
Yeah, but you know, the reality is too, we are also unfair. We are unfair though. So let's say maybe I could pick out 5 laws that don't seem like the government is adhering to. But I could find 100 laws the government's adhering to. But I use the 5 laws and say, oh, well, they're not adhering to those laws, so therefore I don't really trust them. man, come on. We can be more discerning than that. Again, I'm not invalidating people's feelings. You can feel how you want to feel. But I like to tell people, listen, my feelings is one thing. They're real. But you know what is more real and more important? My reasoning. The same one that makes me do what I have to do on a job when I know there are hypocrites on a job. The same reasoning that I use to go in the food store, and I know there are hypocrites in the food store. We have to rely on our reasoning, not for the good of any one person, but for the good of the whole. And that's just how it works. And I'm sorry it's an uncomfortable way to have to be, but that's just the reality of things. We have a call. Do we have another call on the line? The point I make is, whatever your feelings are, you have to deal with them yourself. A government don't need to be rowing with nobody. Don't need to be in rhetoricing with anybody. A opposition seeking to be the government don't need to be telling nobody whether they can be cordial with them or not cordial with them, because none of that matters. We are a country of laws. Either people are obeying the law or they're not obeying the law. If they're not obeying the law, the government has enforcement power. If we are unclear about the law, we have a means to get clarity through the courts or arbitration. I don't need to be your friend. I don't need to be your family. And I don't need to be your lover. To know what the law says and to be able to get the law done. That's all. The law done. And I say again, Hubert Alexander Ingraham, well, let's start with Selinden. Selinden Pinman told the authority back then, oh, you will bend or you will break. And what he did, he went and changed the law. And what happened? Government deal with immigration. Right? Hubert Alexander Ingraham, oh, these provisions expiring. Well, let me extend these. You do this, do that, and do the next thing. And, by the way, pay $500,000 a year for the next 5 years, and we can review the situation after that. That's in the law. You can't make people do nothing by rowing them. You make them do it by law. Right? So when I see people rowing other people and flexing and posturing, I ask when in fact they should use power to do what they do. I ask myself the question, what's the public posturing for? It's for the audience. It's for audience. Because if I really want to change something and I have the power to change something, I'll change it. Let me give you an example. You know, I tell you all, there's a texter who is a former law enforcement officer. Always texts me. He doesn't text me about any intelligent anything, you know. He texts me to tell me something. Well, you know, I let him go for a long while. I do not like to block people. I don't as a practice. I don't do it unless I think that you've reached a rope of offensiveness in me and I'll block you. So I told him, I wrote him and I told him, listen, you don't text me to speak intelligently the points. You just text me to accuse me of things. I am going to block you. Just so you know, don't waste your text. And so I have the power to do that. So you know what I did? I block him. I don't need to talk about that over and over and repeatedly tell him I can block you, I can block you, block you. No, I block him. When you have power, if something isn't going right, something isn't doing done right, if something isn't what you want it to be, you use your power. All this posturing and rhetoric, etc., doesn't matter. Right? You do what is within your power. And in our country, entities, operators operate on the basis of law. I don't need to like you. You don't need to like me. I don't care if you like me, and I don't care if I like you. None of that matters. What matters is that we comply with the law. And that's what matters. If we come to like each other after that, no problem. No problem. You notice how politicians don't care. If certain people dislike them, they do what they have to do anyway. Well, in the respect of the law, same thing. Doesn't matter if I like you. Doesn't matter if you like me. What does the law say? You're listening to Z Live. I'm Chicago Lang, your host. We'll be back after the news.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, streaming on guardiantalkradio.com and the Guardian Radio app, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Chicago Lang, your host. We're so glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. If you want to give us a call, please feel free to do so on 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. If you want to text us, you can text us on 422-4796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. That's 439-3043. We have a text here. Somebody. Somebody asked a question. Let me just make sure I get text. This text says, Mr. Lang, what are your thoughts on the Prime Minister saying that fake voters card poses no threat to the election? I would have preferred to hear him say that the matter should at least be investigated. Well, I mean, I don't know what the Prime Minister said. But the truth of the matter is, he is right, though. If you have a fake voter's card, but you are not on the voter registration, then that doesn't affect the voting because you have to be on the voter register. You have to be on the voter register to vote. So when you show up at the polls to vote, you present your card. You don't even need the card. You could present a passport, you could present your biometric card, you have it. And then you are checked against the voter register. So in order for you to vote, the card has to be aligned with your details on the register, which means that the parliamentary commission on those had to have put you on the register. Now, if they're the ones who issue the voter card, so if you have a voter card, you got it from them. And so presumably, they did the necessary. Now, can someone fake a voter's card? Yes, you could fake a voter's card, but that can only help you if you're on the register, right? And if you go and take a fake voter's card, say from a prior period and say, well, I voted before, well, they check the register. Well, how come you ain't on the register if you voted before? Because you get the card because you were registered. A fake voter's card is a problem, definitely a problem. It's fraud. It should be investigated, absolutely investigated, but it only could be investigated once discovered. Okay, so you can't just say, I would have preferred him to say it should be investigated. It could only be investigated once discovered. And we just had an instance of such a case in which a voter's card was presented, found to be fake, and people were prosecuted for it, so it was investigated, right? So what did Prime Minister do wrong other than saying, no, I don't think that would jeopardize the things, you know what I mean? If you have a widespread instance of such, and if you have collaborated with people in the Parliamentary Commissioner's Office where people are on the register, and they should not be. That's a different story, for sure. I don't think there's any big issue with what the Prime Minister had to say in that regard. We know that where it is discovered is being investigated. When they were having these voters card floating around in cyberspace with people indicating how do these people get these fraudulent voters card, which anyone could have casually looked at and see they were fraud and fake, they were investigated. So, you know, I understand the hypersensitivity sometimes, but, you know, let's be fair, okay? We have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller, we're listening to you.
Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, what's up?
Yeah, I would like to take a look at this situation with Mr. Pintard from a different angle.
Okay.
Of course, he is a Bahamian and a very good, astute politician. But I have on my phone a photo of Mr. Pintard regaled in a secret society Freemason apron, along with my uncle and other persons. So this situation here could be he don't want to offend his colleagues. Would he have a right to being a part of those Freemason society? So
yeah, but
you
yeah,
have them.
Yeah, but
you,
every, no, yeah, but come on, man. Really? Seriously? You have something that a meme you got on that's your thing? No, man. I'm sorry. You're not doing that. That's nonsense. All right, this text says, it is my opinion that this upcoming election needs to be monitored with extreme heightened awareness. A lot is at stake, and I believe a lot of candidates have a lot to gain and lose. A lot was at stake on every election, though. Why is this one particularly more important that it should be monitored? All our elections, a number of our previous elections were monitored. Y'all didn't remember that, eh? Yeah, we had monitors, either from CARICOM or OAS and those. So why is this one especially necessary? The most monitoring you could do for an election is the role the parties play in ensuring that people operate within the bounds of the law and carry out the procedures as enshrined in the law. If you're a party and you sit around and let things happen that are going to jeopardize the integrity of the election, then that's on you. You should scream to the tops on. You should protest where you need to protest, which is the parliamentary commissioner, if you have to. You should take them out of the court. If you do that, what you have to do? You know, outsiders could help you do that more than anybody else. No outsiders. No, there's no better monitorers of the political process in the Bahamas than the political parties. Think about it for a moment, right? They are opposed to each other. They won't win. And so they are not going to let, they're not going to let things happen or continue that might jeopardize their ability to win, which is one of the reasons why in 1992, Hubert Alexander Ingraham won the petitioning to get the purple ink on your thumb during an election. That wasn't existing in our elections before that, but he thought it would bring more, and the party thought it would bring more credibility, and that's what happened. We've been dipping our fingers in the ink ever since. And you could scrub that off all you want. We could see them, the purple under your fingernail and all that kind of stuff. So again, political parties have to be vigilant. The PLP has to be vigilant. The FNM has to be vigilant. The COI has to be vigilant. Independent candidates have to be vigilant. Make sure that skullduggery is not done, whether by officials or by the opposing parties. You have to do that. Now, outside monitors are useful and helpful because they become another set of eyes on the process, right? They do. They become another set of eyes, but they will never be as close to the process as the political parties themselves, as and candidates themselves, as participants in the election. Sim, hi, Mr. Lang. I know you're not talking about this, but I have my purple voter's card. Do I still need to go register? Just curious, my brother. You should go and call the parliamentary commissioner's office and find out what the deal is. I don't want to tell you yes or no, or maybe so, but I don't know if you were if you voted last election, you were on the register last election, and nothing has changed about your constituency, and you have not moved, and you're in the same place you voted in last time, you should be good. That I know, you should be good. But if you moved, if you didn't vote last time, if you weren't on the register last time, you should call the parliamentary commissioner's office to make sure, straighten yourself up. This text says, laugh out loud. So Brave Davis isn't a secret society in the Bahamas where people take pride in dressing in too much clothes. Laugh out loud, they dig in deep this go round. And but you know how many people I know it was in secret societies and still are? What does that mean? My father was in a secret society, right? When he buried, you know, they do. I mean, it ain't nothing I would participate in, but what would that mean? You're in a secret society, right? And to conjure that up in that you trying to do what you do because you don't want to offend you. Really? If Michael is in a secret society and Prime Minister Davis is a secret society, none of them should want to offend anybody who's in a secret society. Well, listen to me. I live in a country with some interesting multiplicity of ideas and thoughts in the world. Right? So the Public Disclosure Act of the Bahamas is one of those pieces of legislation that certainly in its execution has not been respectfully treated. It is routine. I am going back as far as my time in office and beyond that. Members of Parliament, senators and the like, have been unserious about faithfully complying with the timelines of the act. Unserious. That's the truth. I mean, I could put it in a prettier way, but there's no pretty better. It's unseriousness because, there is no reason that a member of parliament or a senator or anyone else should not be able to time in a timely way submit a disclosure. Not on the first go round. And most certainly not on the extended go round. Now, you heard me say on the same show that I submitted disclosure. I've never not disclosed, but I was one of them who's not timely disclosure. Why? It just honestly didn't register as an urgency to comply with until this is when it kicked into me because in the first early days, I didn't even focus on it. When Ingram said to us, listen to me, either you all go and submit your disclosures or I will give instructions to the Disclosure Commission to prosecute. That'll wake you up. That'll make you think because what happens is the Disclosure Commission sends you a letter, reminding you that you didn't disclose. And if you ignore it, then their next step before they go and prosecute is they will send a letter to the head of your political organization and they are supposed to do the necessary to make and cause compliance to happen. If you know, if that don't happen, then you can be prosecuted. But there's not been a seriousness about that. And there's no, like, honestly, there's no legitimate reason to not do so in a timely way. It is and can be tedious, especially if your affairs is complicated. It can be tedious. It can even be uneasy, you know, because even if you ain't doing nothing wrong, just to, you know, putting your business out there and that kind of way, you know what I mean? It could be uneasy, right? Sometimes you don't like it. One time on my disclosure, I had a negative balance on my account. I mean, you don't want to say that and say that, but I mean, that's what it was at the time. Like, I mean, 2 days later, it was different, but I had to disclose as at that day. You know, everybody's spending money in December, you know, so forth. But so it's not a thing people do delightfully, and you wouldn't do it delightfully if you wanted to do it, but it's the law. It's the requirement. And there is an unseriousness about approaching it. We have a call on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Good afternoon, Z. How are you doing today?
Right here, man. How are you?
Man, everything blessed. Good weather over there. Nice, good, lovely weather.
Oh, nice, nice.
Yeah, let's go back to the passport. When you leaving, vehemence leaving to go to the United States, we don't go through immigration, right? We only go through U.S. Customs, right?
But you they're border control, patrol, yeah.
Right, right. So, talking about the passport, because just remember, the passports, them are legal. Get them through illegal means, because the first bus was an immigration officer, bus person was coming back to the States with this passport that they obtained illegally. So, let's give kudos to that immigration officer. And then the next case, with the father and the son, who got his passport to his son illegally, some type of false papers, are getting married to a Bahamian. The register person would bust that one. Let's give kudos to them, too. Because they was in slack. They was on their P's and Q's and looking out, because they got to slip through too easily, probably out a lot of other stuff. Than so let's give the immigration officer and the next register would bust these two passports for us to find out that this young day, the father and son is trying to register. They're trying to register the vote, but they had a legal passport. But they obtained it illegally.
Right.
Right.
Right. Right.
So for the rest of the people, it would be all right for them to be looking out and be sharp and vigilant. Just like these two persons, to bust these passports with these fellas who's trying to do foolishness with. Mm-hmm. Just give kudos to them.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what it takes, vigilance. You know, you got to not be so comfortable with the routineness of your work.
Right.
But you, if you inspect, you can pick up. You can pick up things, and that's what is required. Vigilance.
Vigilance, yeah, because he could obtain, if that person was slacking, was in on the job, they could get that with his card. They could, because they have a legit passport. They could get that with
no question. No question.
Check, like how you say, you probably check the register, and they name in on the register. And the person say, hold on, man, let me check this background. How you get this passport? Where you this?
But a lot of times when these things getting picked up, it is the ability of the person to speak good English, though. I mean, to speak English. Like, listen to me, man, bro. I ain't telling no lies. And I saw the other day. And I was frequenting some stores in Nassau. And the security guards that they use it, like, they could hardly speak English.
All over the place. All over here.
Right, so I mean, like, you can't tell me that don't raise an eyebrow.
Exactly.
Security guard.
Man.
Then I went to auto shop. The guy was trying to ask a fella. He says, "Is your car from Japan?" And the guy couldn't even understand what he was asking him.
Man, see, I was in Cash and Go the other day, and it had but four people on the line, and the ladies waiting there trying to assist them. And but four of them had passport too, and they couldn't speak English, and they sending money to Haiti, and she's trying to like tell them what to try to follow the form, and they have Bahamian passport, and they can't speak English.
There's definitely something, you know. And you know where I get more alarmed. See, if you came to the Bahamas even illegally, let's say you're Haitian, you came to the Bahamas illegally, but you came to the Bahamas when you were an older person years and years and years ago.
Uh-huh.
You and I both know that you change your language quickly if you're an older person, no matter how long you live in a place. It would be no different than an older Bahamian living in the U.S. and still have that hard, heavy Bahamian accent. You know what I mean?
Right.
Where I get alarmed is when I see younger people who got no, you hardly speak English, then I think, I'm thinking, no. Because if you were a younger person living in the Bahamas for 18 years or so, you can speak good Bahamian English. Yeah, you could break in the patois, I mean the Creole, but you could speak English.
Right, that means you just come. That's
Just come.
All the government workers out there, be vigilant. Just be vigilant. Look out, especially around this time of time, plenty of foolishness going on. And money runs things. Many people buying out things to get these documents. Money.
Yep. Yeah.
All right, boy.
I appreciate you calling, man. Thanks for calling. Take care, buddy. Says thank you so much. I'm not sure what I did, but okay, no problem. So the disclosure is a continuous irritation for the public because the public has an interest in knowing what politicians have. They ought to have an interest. There's a reason for the disclosure law. They want to be able to track and see, why are you getting rich like this? Because let me tell you something. If you was a cabinet minister and you come into government and you have modest means, there's no way you could disclose after 4 or 5 years any a buggy load of money. You doing something wrong. Now, mind you, you could have made a very sweet investment, because you're not prohibited from doing that. You're prohibited from having other income earning means other than maybe your family has dividends that you get because of their wealth, inheritance, and that kind of stuff. All of these things you could be able to explain to the Public Disclosure Commission. But if the commission notes that your net worth and income seems to be out of line with what is reasonable, they have every right to investigate that. And they can. When I made a disclosure about something, there was a meaningful difference from year to year. And they asked me about it. And I was restructuring I did. And I gave them all the legal documents, et cetera, and they were fine with that. So they do and will and can pay attention. And they should pay attention. And doing public disclosure properly is such an easy win for a government. Listen, if a government does regular and faithful disclosures every year, I guarantee you they will go up a notch in trustworthiness in the heads and minds of the public. You tell me if I'm wrong. You're the public. Call on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Yeah, good afternoon, Shivaz. Nice show, man. This thing, you know, I know some time back they was saying that passports are being circulated and the government deem it as not so, and it's only political propaganda. But here of late now, you hear a couple people get caught going to the airport with fraudulent passport and was charged before the courts and stuff. But that's a serious thing. You can't be selling out your birthright. You leave your grandchildren and great grandchildren at a disadvantage, man. So that's all I have to say.
Yeah, man, appreciate it. Thanks a lot. This text says, good afternoon, Mr. Lang. What was supposed to be a town hall meeting turned into a political rout. Loud noises and not mature audience at times showed why they were there. It didn't seem to me as if the hecklers were there to become educated, informed, or updated. It appeared to be gaslighting and supporting one's party instead of finding out what the real facts are. I found some interesting information out about the organization of that event the other day, actually. I because of the sensitive nature of it, I'm not going to say anything, but it was some interesting information I found out. This text said, good day, Mr. Lang, and you are a realist. We have a big problem in this country. You can't, in the face of information, you can't be unreal. This text says, I worked in a sensitive area for government. Not all employees are vigilant and mindful. Most of the security officers hired in the Bahamas are not Bahamians. Whether or not they have a work permit, I can't speak to that. The Public Disclosure Commission needs more teeth to enforce after a five-year tenure because the amount of money made is mysterious. Inquiring minds want to know. You should know. You should be able to track a member of parliament, a cabinet minister's, a senator's. I think even permanent secretaries have to disclose. I don't know if their disclosures are treated in the same way as in public disclosure, as in published, being published, but certainly politicians have their facts and information published. I don't think that the disclosures are overly intrusive. So that shouldn't be a hindrance to the disclosure. But it's just why don't you get more timely disclosures and the publication of the disclosures? It's because that area of public life is unserious. That's the only reason why. I mean, you think about it. Like, we will have, the government of the Bahamas will have town meetings about this. We'll have public announcements about this. We'll press statements about this. We'll national addresses about this and what have you. Public disclosure, a fundamental aspect of accountability and transparency in the nation, then gets treated like an aside. You tell me. Dr. Minnis makes mention that persons whose wealth increases by 4 and 5 times, that should be investigated. I agree with him 100%. That doesn't mean you did anything wrong, but it should be investigated by the commission. And if the commission finds nothing wrong, then they go and say, well, move on, and then publish it. So you, the public, could see. And maybe you could ask your own questions. The commission may have asked them questions, but they public figures. They want your vote. You say to them, Simbro, when you came into office, your net worth was $250,000. Now your net worth is $2.5 million. And how did that happen? I'd love to know how that happened, because I'd love to do that for myself. Lead me, be my example, right? But the truth of the matter is, public is under the Minnis administration was no better. The Minister Monroe asked, how would he know those things are supposed to be private? Please, 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 please. We have a call on the line. Go ahead, caller, we're listening to you.
Hey, Mr. Lang, how you doing?
I'm right here now. What's up?
I want to get your opinion on something, right? Because I think, you know, you sound a better, you can give me a better answer than I would have gotten from anyone else. Let's say hypothetically that there was a tremendous change of government to a brand new party. And the question I'm interested in is finding out, what do you see with a transitional time, and how easy would it be for a new party to transition into a government? And do you see any chaos or difficulty in a new party, never experienced running the government before, from day one taking over? And in your opinion, because you've been there, how long does it take for an average, let's say, minister or any guy to really get the gist of what they're doing, whether as a minister or even as an MP. And like I said, never served at all. Mm-hmm. I'd like to get your view on that, sir.
Oh, sure, no problems. Well, the transition doesn't have to be long at all, because we don't have a legal transition period in between governments. On the day that the election is done and the results and returns that go into the governor general, that could be the same day the governor general calls on the leader of the party with the most members elected to the House of Assembly, or whoever they believe is commands the support of the majority. They call on that person to become prime minister and to form a government. And so the prime minister could form a government in 2 minutes if he wants, if he knows who he wants in government, and he need not only next day. The transition for a new, brand new person doesn't have to be hard, if they are sensible enough to respect the institutional knowledge of the permanent secretaries, the secretary of the cabinet, the permanent secretaries. It is in them that the guidance for what the law requires in the formation of the government that they can get. So they would be heavily reliant in the first instance, depending on their own understanding of government. So you, honestly, I would not want to elect anybody who don't demonstrate a reasonable understanding of our governance system. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. But if they don't, then they would be heavily reliant on the secretary to the cabinet in the first instance and permanent secretaries in the second instance to guide them through the process.
Yeah, yeah, because I just sit down and I, you know, we were having a conversation with a few friends of mine, and we were discussing, you know, what if a brand new organization takes over government? What would be the learning curve? I mean, literally never experienced.
The learning curve would depend on personalities themselves, whether they are quick learners or not, and whether or not they have respect and regard for the institutional infrastructure of the government. And I'm saying again, those permanent secretaries, that secretary to the cabinet and them, they are critically essential to helping your learning curve be shorter and to be able to guide you through the governance process in terms of putting things in place.
Right, yeah.
So that's if it were me and I was brand new, my first duty after being sworn in, I'm sitting down with the secretary of the cabinet, I'm asking questions. Secondly, if there are other former, if there are other people who've been prime ministers of the Bahamas that I have any regard for, whether they are my party or not, I'm going to talk to them.
Definitely. You know, because I'm, you know, there's like a, there's no real per se, why would I help you if I just get kicked out? You know, I'm just thinking that's the kind of thing. Why would I?
You don't have to go to that those people, but there are others who've been out of it for a little while who I'm sure would be willing to be helpful. The election is over.
Right.
You know, when I lost Fort Charlotte to Alfred Sayers, he can tell you.
Right.
He and I had lunch together and we sat down and had lunch and I talked to him about things I had done and left in place and so forth, and he could do with it as he wished.
Yeah, and see that's reasonable, good common sense. You know, but we obviously realize that not everybody is gonna take that that mature view, and unfortunately, you know, this, I was just thinking about it, you know, if
it's
just
ever a good question. It's a good question.
Yeah, because I don't want to, you know, I don't want something where someone is taking 2, 3, 4 months to learn the way of things. And I hear sometimes a lot in the rhetoric of elections, you know, particularly what we're going to do when we get there. And a lot of times they don't even know what is required when they get there to change their view of what they may be looking at this moment, because they ain't there. And they don't really run into how things run. And, you know, a lot of things we say what we're going to do, but when they get there, it's a whole different show, you know?
Yeah, but that's what PSs are for. And a good PS will tell you, Minister, you cannot do that. That's against the law. Let me show you what the law says. All right? Thanks. This says, Lang, a lot of people get charged for fraud passport. What about those who are responsible for giving it to them? Well, I don't know of a lot of people. I don't know a lot of people have been charged with false passports, but certainly the investigation should also be about the people who helped them and assisted them, if that is true. We have another call on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you. Hi, go ahead, caller. We're listening to you. All right. This text says, can we have Mr. Davis hold a town hall meeting on the Sovereign Wealth Fund and tell us what he's doing with it? You could call for it. It would be up to him to decide whether that's what he wants to do, but you could call for it. This text says, I, for one, would like to see public disclosure. If corruption is present in our leaders, we have a problem. Absolutely, you do, if that is true. This text says, it's $150,000 each year given for each constituency. Minister, total amounting to $750,000 after 5 years, not used, returned to the public treasury. Does it go on a personal bank account or a constituency account? I my understanding is it goes on whatever account is given to the Ministry of Finance. And sometimes I understand it's personal account. Well, it has to be personal because unless you have a, in even a constituency account, unless it is incorporated in as a company or a nonprofit organization or something like that, it still has to be in the name of somebody because you'd have to do trading as Bamboo Town, trading as Echo City. So it's still a personal account. And this is interesting because if it's a personal account and that money is going on your personal account, then you have to disclose that as income. You that's an income. If it were a company, then the company would be getting it and receiving it or the organization. But if that's going on an account where you are trading as, that's your personal income. And that account should be disclosed as well, if it's in your name. And it'd be interesting to see what the politicians say to that. It'd be interesting to see. They said, Mr. Lang just wanted to know, when is it unethical or even illegal for a politician or a cabinet minister portfolio to make investments in upcoming shares or purchase, even though his or her attorney or company, even through his or her? Well, anytime you use privileged information to advantage yourself as a government minister, then you are behaving in conflict of interest. So that anytime, there's no time when you should be trading off of information. You shouldn't be sitting down and seeing something come before you and say, well, let me in on that deal, but you can still my uncle or something like that. That's all unethical. Or you could pay me, you know, when I get out of office, you just hold the money and pay me later. That's all unethical. All of that. All right. You know, so there are ways for politicians to avoid disclosing assets or liabilities. There are ways for them to avoid that, legal ways and illegal ways. For them to do that, right? Legal ways to do it, or a company, so where the liability is disclosed outright, just the value, the net value of the shares are disclosed, the book value of shares are disclosed. So you could do that's not illegal. You can do that. That's a structuring of your affairs to give it a certain appearance. That's not illegal. Nothing's wrong with that. But if you put in your assets in your second cousin name, trusting them not to do anything untoward, if you let income in and so forth, that's unethical. That's you're trying to evade the disclosure of your financial affairs. And that's trying to circumvent the spirit of the disclosure laws. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue and wrap up our conversation. We'll be back after this break.
Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Marcos has the best.
Go sauce cheese! 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 Go!
Order Marcos now. We win on taste.
The following is a paid political message.
Out to Kalani! Cause
find it here.
You're looking for truth,
find it here.
Vote for MacGyver, she's here for you.
See everybody in Kalani.
Change is here, hands in the air.
See everybody in Kalani.
Vote for MacGyver,
she is a fighter.
That was a paid political message.
You already started. You turned your passion into income. Time to level up. The Tourism Development Corporation's calling entrepreneurs ages 18 to 35 to enter the Blue, Orange, and Green Economy Pitch Competition on March 30th. If you're building something connected to tourism, this is your opportunity. This is your chance. Visit tdcbahamas.com to learn more about the different economies, program eligibility, and apply by March 23rd.
Boost your buying power with a margin loan at rates as low as 7.5%. A margin loan offers convenient flexibility, freeing up capital without liquidating your investments. Whether you're looking to diversify business opportunity or refinance higher cost debt, RF provides access to cash within 48 hours for any purpose. Tailored, effortless, powerful. Discover how a margin loan can work for you. Visit rfgroup.com or call 603-6000. RF Bank and Trust. Money at work.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand. Come take my hand.
We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z-Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.m on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon. Listen. March 27th is our Z-Live Far Back Friday event. Tickets are on sale now at the Guardian. So you can get your tickets now. They're available. Now listen, I can monitor these ticket sales for me to do this. We are making provision for you. If them tickets don't go like I want, I'm gonna come right back on this radio and say, you know, we're not doing it. So the tickets are $50 a piece. They are available. The event is going to be at the States. It's gonna be music. And eat. Now, don't come there thinking I can feed, you know, crab and rice and eats and some them heavy drinks you're going to be buying yourself. But all the music and the fun will be there. So the tickets are available at the Nassau Guardian. So you can stop by the Nassau Guardian and you can pick up tickets for our Z-Live event, March 27th, Friday. Can in at 7 p.m. We have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Good day, Mr. Lang.
Hey, what's going on?
The question I want to, or the point I want to raise, I just want to first find out, have you ever read the VAT Act?
Yeah, man.
Okay. So
not only read,
there's a portion of the VAT Act that talks about a management system that's what is supposed to be implemented at the point of sales, or a point of sales system that was supposed to be implemented when they implemented VAT. Correct or no? Or am I not speaking?
No, sir. Not in the VAT. Not in the VAT Act. No.
Say it again.
No, there's no provision that I have seen in the VAT talking about any point of sales system implementation. No.
Okay.
Not in the VAT Act. The VAT Act doesn't speak to your administering of your affairs in the stores, as far as I'm aware. You are supposed to apply VAT in accordance with the law, and so I don't know of any POS mentioned in the VAT Act.
Because I think that would have been a good idea, because I read in the newspaper today, I saw some type of statement from the Minister of Tourism, and he talks about how they're going to monitor stores closely to ensure that they provide the VAT to the people. And so it was all strange that he said it when at the point of implementation of VAT, they could have implemented a POS system that could have being installed at all
No, they can't. Mm-hmm. See.
Why can't they?
First of all, you can't come in my business and implement a POS system.
Why?
A POS system is my business's system.
But what is a POS system? It only gives
because I have the right to run my business on a non-computerized cash register if I want. You can't make.
Well, what if you're registered and now your money you're collecting is not only your money, so we want to ensure that the money you're collecting for
No, but you don't have
correct.
To. The only way, what I have to ensure is that when you come and if you need to audit my account, that you can see, you were charging $10 for this. 10% or whatever the percentages of that was VAT. And so you go ahead and you remit to me what you're supposed to remit to me, remit to me. And then I refund you whatever VAT payments you made if you VAT registered and so forth. But you can't, the law doesn't require that. The law doesn't require it. You know how many small businesses and others that might not want to go that route?
But if you was an honest person and you collecting my money and I only simply saying I'm putting in, you could operate just like a
But if you're an honest person, it doesn't matter whether you have a POS system or not. You're going to give the government what you collected in terms of VAT. If you're an honest person, you could be a dishonest person using POS.
So what is one of
because a POS system is only set up by the user.
And you is. Whether and the user have to buy it from a company because they don't have their own POS system.
I could buy a POS system from a company, but I don't have to be tied into a company to do my POS system.
Well, that's kind of strange.
Why is it strange?
You collecting my tax money, and I'm saying to you, you don't have the right systems to ensure a real accountability.
That's not a system doesn't ensure accountability. Accounting system does that. And an accounting system could be manual or it could be digital. It doesn't have to be digital. You know how many years we had accounts developed in this country in the world computers?
I understand. I just thought we were trying to move forward in our country, but no problem. So
yeah, using a POS system is great, but what you are trying to say is I just think impractical. It's impractical for the law to tell me I have to use a POS system. I don't know. All right, man. Thanks a lot. Appreciate you calling. Says, Mr. Lang, do you think that we as Bahamians are better off than before looking back from 2026 years later? I don't see it or feel it. Too much Bahamians have become money hungry and envious. Is the vehicle they choose to drive? That's a big question. Whether we better off or not. We take that up on another day, but you know, sometimes whether you're better off or not depends on who you're talking to. I'm better off today than I was in 2000. I'm definitely better off in all kinds of ways as a individual, education-wise, health-wise, and so forth. I'm better off, definitely. But now, is that better off because of me or the government or some? That's a different story. I know some people who are worse off, definitely worse off. Well, I know some people who are not here on the planet who are not healthy, who are unfortunately economically and financially deprived. So we have to be careful. As a general rule, we can look at various metrics in the country. We can look at what average unemployment was around 26 years ago versus now. We could look at what average GDP growth was like over a reasonable period around that time. We can look at infant mortality. We can look at life expectancy. Look at our infrastructure in terms of communications and power and these kinds of stuff. So there are many objective metrics we can use and compare those 26 years ago to now and give us a sense of whether we are better off or not. So, but that can't be answered today without doing the work, right? And I wouldn't try to do that without doing the work. Because we sometimes make those approaches and just really have these sometimes partisan partisan answers that only satisfy our own narrative, and so as opposed to being objective. We have a call on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Yes, sir. I guess thanks, sir.
What's up?
Yes, sir. I would like for you to address this saying that many of us have, right? They refer to some Bahamians as average Bahamians. My question is, would that mean that the Bahamians below average don't matter?
Well, I think what average is a blunt of people trying to define what the more or less common experience is of a population. So for instance, if you took all of the incomes of all the people in the Bahamas and you divided it by that number of people, but that gives you an average income. And so if you looked on a curve of incomes, then you will see that most people sit within a particular range. And so someone might say, well, that's the average income. It's only a blunt way of trying to describe what the more common experience is of most people. It is not that the people below the average or the people above the average don't matter. It's just trying to capture what the more common experience is. And that's a simple thing to do. It's one of the, it's a more efficient way of describing a population. Hello?
Yeah, I feel like the masses are below the average, just like in education, we have an average.
Yeah, but your feelings don't matter. What matters is what the action. No. Your feelings don't matter. What matters is measurement.
Okay, they say that's what matters. Bahamians don't the government is not taking care of the average Bahamian. The average Bahamian is not benefiting. What about the below average Bahamian? Who are definitely not benefiting. Like nobody's advocating for them. That's my point.
Okay, let me tell you something. I keep telling you, when you call this place, you can't just make statements what ain't supported by the facts. You can't tell Pastor Bishop Hancher, who is feeding the poor every day, who is woke there working with the poor every day, and other people who are doing it, or the Healing Hands people and these people who are trying to do for people who are underprivileged, and say nobody is. There are churches who are feeding programs, etc. You can't say that and be accurate. Right? You say what you think and what you believe, and then we could say, okay, well, that's a view you got, But it ain't. Anyway, we will always have work to do in this country. Always. I don't care, you get the best government on planet Earth. Ingram is a good government. Selinden had a good government for many years. And we made progress. But was all the work done? No, still was things to do. Still was problems. There were issues. What you want to know is, are you making progress, man? And are you making good progress? That's the issue. Are you making good progress? And this radio station could be here for the next 100 years and you don't have something to complain about. Something you don't make stuff up to complain about. People complain about God created the planet and they complain about him. It was so bad. Israel went to God and said, listen, we don't want you to be our king no more. We want a man king like everybody else. You ain't good enough for us, God. We want a man king. God said, no, but I'm your king. Be your king. And so he said, get a king. Ooh, a man king. He can do this to you. He can do that to you. No. We want a man king like everybody else. And the Bible say, God gave him Saul. How did that work out? Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Z Live. I'm Shavago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us today. God's best life. We'll be back with you again tomorrow. Have a fantastic afternoon.
Come take my hand. Come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm and the weather.